Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell. Yes, again, we are here. It's Friday, September 20th, 2019. We're going to talk about the Thursday night game, which I'm not going to lie, we're not going to talk a lot about that game because it was bad. Talk more about the Jalen Ramsey situation, get to a couple of game previews later on in the show. Joining me to do that is my friend, frequent contributor to the show. It is The Athletic's Lindsay Jones. Lindsay, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. How are you?
I'm good. I am not excited to talk about the Thursday night game. So very briefly, before we move on to the Jalen Ramsey discussion, was there anything to enjoy or take out of that game?
I enjoyed Tom Brady's tweet. Yes. I would like him to live tweet more games. I would like to formally request that to make him available for basically any game he's not playing in, because look, he's just like the rest of us. Mm-hmm. The games have been almost unwatchable because of penalties, and they are up this year. Holding penalties especially are dramatically up. I know your colleague Kevin Seifert has very well documented this at ESPN. But Tom Brady is exactly right. I mean, some of these games are so difficult to watch because the penalties are taking over. So I'm here for Tom Brady's tweets and I agree with him. And then not going to lie, I was speaking to a college class yesterday evening during the first half of the game, and nobody had our phones out. And kind of at halftime, or it was about halftime when the class wrapped up and some of the students pulled out their phones and said, wait, what? Yeah. You know, Tom Brady is tweeting and the game is really awful. And then I certainly wasn't expecting 17-0 there into the fourth quarter for the Jags. So look, I'm here for Jalen Ramsey drama, which we're going to get into here in a minute. Yes. And I'm ready for more Gardner Minshew. Let's make that happen.
Yeah, the Gardner Minshew era is fun, which the Blake Bortles era was not very fun, even when he was doing well. It was more like, you know, he was being dragged by his defense to a successful season. The Gardner Minshew era, they're still going to be about the defense, but at least it's entertaining. And I think it's so funny because, you know, the argument when Nick Foles got signed before the season, when he got that big deal from the Jags, and it was really only the Jags negotiating against themselves, the argument in some circles was, oh, well, they had to pay him so much because he has to be a leader, and so we have to pay him like a leader to give him the sort of credibility. Gardner Minshew is not making a lot of money. He's a late-round pick. He looks like a leader through 2 weeks. I mean, it looks like he is, you know, he fits naturally in that role in a way that a late-round pick typically does not fit in as a rookie.
Yeah, I mean, there's some guys who just have it, you know, and yeah, he's bounced around a little bit in college, but I don't think there was any question that he was like the man in Pullman last year. And, you know, I think you have to kind of have an outsized personality to succeed while playing for Mike Leach. Yes. And yeah, I mean, he just kind of has it, and we'll see how sustainable his playing style is, you know, if once teams that are maybe a little bit better equipped defensively than the Titans were last night, once, you know, there's a little bit more film out there on him, you know, if he comes down to earth a little bit. But yeah, this is a fun story. And look, it's making the Jags interesting. Yeah. And there was literally nothing other than Jalen Ramsey fighting with Doug Marrone that was interesting about this Jags team until we got Gardner Minshew and his jockstrap and mustache and all of those sorts of things. And now I just want to know if The Good Place can edit it into season 4. That's supposed to debut like next week. So they gotta work that in, because I'm going to be super disappointed if it's still more Blake Bortles jokes.
I hope it's
and
like,
they haven't been able to replace it.
I hope it's like really sort of like over the top editing where it's like, you know, the guy's talking at a normal volume and then, you know, it's Gardner Minshew. Like it's like the volume is totally off relative to the rest of what he's saying. Like over the next 6 weeks, Gardner Minshew, I mean, he's at Denver next week. That's going to be a tough place to play for young quarterbacks. But, I mean, Carolina's defense has been inconsistent to start of the year. The Saints' pass defense has been inconsistent to start of the year. Bengals just got ripped apart by the Niners. Jets' defense, I don't know who's even going to be playing for the Jets by week 8. I mean, it's not crazy to think that he could put together a very reasonable stretch of games and end up, you know, possibly competing for the AFC South, which is still wide open here. I mean, there's no great team in the AFC South.
And that's going to open up a really interesting question for Jacksonville, because this is not a season-ending injury for Nick Foles.
Exactly.
They expect that he's going to be back at some point later in the season. And if he keeps playing like this, what do you do? Well, I mean, man, poor Nick Foles. He finally got his big contract and a chance to start again after everything he's been through. And, you know, this, you know, rookie with a mustache who wears nothing but a jockstrap comes in and 2 weeks later takes his job. I mean, that would be a hell of a story. But Yeah, God bless you, Gardner Minshew, for giving us a reason to watch the Jacksonville Jaguars. Like, I live in Denver. I might actually go to that game next week. There was no way that I was going to go to Jags Broncos, but now I might go. So I'll report back and let you guys know if I go and follow him around for a day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like this was maybe the perfect storm of ugly football game, where you had Jags Titans, which is sort of like the punchline for Thursday Night Football, which is maybe a little unfair and unwarranted. Has been on Thursday Night Football a bunch, but only one game per year. In the rain, so it's a national game, so everyone's watching, including Tom Brady, as we saw. And then Sean Hockley's crew, as Kevin Seifert pointed out, I think is the most penalty-friendly crew in the NFL. So, you know, as bad as it was, and it certainly was not an especially watchable game, I do hope that that's sort of, you know, the peak, whether it's driven by Tom Brady, whether it's driven by just, you know, the league sort of naturally not pushing as hard for holding penalties. And it's clearly a point of contention. And it's, you know, even if they are valid penalties, you can call holding pretty frequently. And it still feels like, you know, it's not making the game better by having a ton of third and longs, which we saw a lot of last week.
No, it just baffles me that the NFL looks after, like, you know, kind of two of the most successful seasons they've had in terms of offense, and ratings are back up and people are excited and there's all these new young quarterbacks, but the NFL looked and said, you know, what can we do to change this? Let's call holding every other play, because come on, man, like, let's just give the people what they want, and that's offense. And this is just, it's been really painful to watch. So I'm curious to see if this becomes like some of the other rule changes and points of emphasis that we've seen in other years, where we get a ton of it the first month of the season, and then they really kind of rein it back in as the season goes along. I hope so, because yes, I know that it's important to call penalties when there are the blatant penalties, but like you said, you can find holding on every play. And some of these games have just become very, very difficult to watch, and it's changing the outcomes of games for things that are fairly ticky-tacky at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's one thing if you have, you know, teams sitting there and saying, hey, we're happy these calls are being made, but when you have the best player possibly in the history of the sport saying, you know, I don't think this is good for the sport, you know, it's sort of the, when LeBron James tweets about stuff, things happen, you know? Like, Tom Brady has not used that sort of platform, really, outside of making jokes and doing the occasional bit on Twitter or Instagram. But, you know, I can't remember Brady criticizing the league this way.
Yeah, certainly not. And not the officials like this. I mean, he's had plenty of things that he could gripe about with the NFL over the years. I mean, he wasn't even out there really like complaining about, I'm trying to think of any of the other rule changes. I mean, honestly, this is the first rule change that's actually affected the offense. Everything else has been kind of to the benefit of quarterbacks in the past. But yeah, I mean, it is LeBron James. You're exactly right. That's probably the perfect comparison. It's LeBron James speaking out about something. And well, let's see if there's actually, if that has an impact in the league office of having, and if any other quarterbacks follow his lead and high profile people, because, you know, coaches are reluctant to speak out too much about penalties because they can get fined. Mm-hmm. But if more guys like Tom Brady come out and talk about how this is really affecting the product on the field, then, you know, maybe, you know, by October, the competition committee will get on the phone with the officiating crews and say, hey, let's tamp that back a little bit.
Yeah, certainly seems like that's what's going to happen, you know, whether it's this week or in the weeks to come. Talking about player power and talking about NBA-NFL comparisons, we'll start with Jalen Ramsey, and then we'll get to the broader conversation about this. But Jalen Ramsey, after last week's game, requested a trade from the Jaguars. He got into a disagreement, certainly, with head coach Doug Marrone during the game. He said in the days afterwards that kind of passed. Like, he wasn't that upset about that moment and what happened there. But things that were said to him after the game by the Jaguars organization led him to request a trade, which he says he did not want to get out. I don't think I can, you know, decide whether that happened or not. I don't know. It certainly wasn't leaked to me. But by whatever circumstance, Jalen Ramsey now appears to be, you know, in discussions, and the Jaguars appear to be in discussions for trading their star cornerback. So do you think, let's start with this, do you think the Jaguars do end up trading Ramsey, given what you know and given, you know, sort of the tea leaves here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really going to depend on what sort of offer they get. I mean, I think they're setting the bar very high, and they have some kind of comparisons now. I mean, the Steelers just gave up a first-round draft pick for Minkah Fitzpatrick, who is I think, a very good young player, even significantly younger than Jalen Ramsey is, but not as good as Jalen Ramsey. So I think, you know, you could, that's kind of the baseline. So you wouldn't accept anything less than what the Dolphins got in exchange for Minkah Fitzpatrick from the Steelers. And then you look kind of on the flip side, and you have seen a team get 2 first-round draft picks for an elite, you know, the best defensive player at his position, arguably, with the Bears-Raiders trade last year for Khalil Mack. So I think that's on the high side. I think that's unrealistic to expect that a team is going to give up 2 first-round draft picks right now at this point in the season. But I think there are teams that are looking at Jalen Ramsey and saying, yeah, we want that guy on our team. And if you're a team who has a need at cornerback and you have some cap flexibility, I think he's worth it. I mean, he's such a good player. It's just a matter of who's actually going to pull the trigger and give up a first round pick and then maybe an additional higher pick, a first round pick and a player. And if the Jaguars will actually go for that, because, you know, if you're the Jags, like, why do you move on from him right now? You're competitive in your division. Looks like you, I mean, that division is going to be wide open. It's not a lost season at this point where, you know, I get why the Dolphins are doing it. The Dolphins are completely rebuilding and moving on for the future. And so you're going to acquire as much draft capital as you can. If you're the Jags, trading away your best player, and I don't think there's too much of an argument that he is your best player. Sorry to all you Gardner and Minshew fan club out there. Jalen Ramsey is your best player. So what are you doing if you trade him away at this point? I mean, is that waving a white flag on the season? I don't think that's the right message you send to the rest of your team by trading him, unless somebody calls and gives you first two first round picks, and maybe you have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to run off the Minshew stands, to be clear. If you're still listening, thank you. Well, thank you for not turning the podcast off. In terms of Jalen Ramsey, to your point, this isn't similar to the Jadeveon Clowney situation, because Clowney was holding out on a franchise tag. And, you know, certainly could have then sat out the season, and the Texans would have had to franchise him at 20% of his previous rate next year. And that would have been untenable, wouldn't have created significant trade value. So at some point the Texans said, hey, we're not re-signing this guy. Let's just get the best offer we can. And that ended up being a third round pick and a couple of linebackers. But Jalen Ramsey, he's still 2 years away from a franchise tag. He's making $17.5 million over the next 2 years, and then he gets franchised. So that would be the point where he could really start holding out, and it would actually have a significant impact. So, I mean, the Jaguars hold a lot of the cards here. You know, they have the ability to sit there and say, hey, we want to keep him. We want to compete for a playoff berth, and we think that, you know, he's going to make us better, and we don't have to make a trade yet. The only thing I can think of is the fear of maybe getting into the Clowney situation down the line, where you say, okay, we're not signing this guy to an extension. He's not going to be a part of our team in the future. We just can't trust him to be that guy. And now, so if you do that, then basically you're going to get the most trade value for him probably now, as opposed to even next offseason or the offseason after that. So I could see them maybe thinking about it from that perspective. But to your point, they have to get blown away. Trading him for a second round pick or a couple second round picks right now makes no sense. There's absolutely no argument for doing that.
If you're the Jaguars, wouldn't the thing that makes the most sense is figure out how to use him better defensively? Because I think that's what he's so angry about, is the defensive scheme that he's in and a coaching staff that's not using him to the best of his abilities. So wouldn't that be a smarter organizational move, is to coach better to your best player's strengths rather than continue to fight with him and then potentially trade him away for an unknown quantity? That just is what would make most sense to me. But, you know, I guess I'm not an NFL coach who's so married to my own defensive scheme that I won't adjust it to fit my best player.
I mean, do you think Bill Belichick would be using Jalen Ramsey as a zone corner a frequent amount of the time?
Absolutely not.
No, Bill Belichick would
be. I don't think Wade Phillips would be. I mean, I think there's a lot of really good defensive coaches who would look at Jalen Ramsey and say, oh, you're best in man coverage. Okay, let's do man coverage and not try to force one of the best defensive players in football to do something that he's not the best at. And not to say he's not a good zone corner, because I think he can be a very good zone corner, but I think he sees how he could make their defense better, how he could play better individually, and they're not doing it at this point. So I think there is some middle ground here where the sides should be able to come together and work this out. And if these are strictly football reasons that he's unhappy, but I don't have a ton of faith that the Jags organizationally are going to be willing to do that.
It does seem like you know, this is a battle between Jalen Ramsey and Tom Coughlin, no?
Yeah, I think so. And it's kind of coming out through Doug Marrone, who's kind of the middleman, who mm-hmm. has to be there to kind of be the day-to-day guy who's enforcing all of this stuff. You know, yeah, I mean, Tom Coughlin is the guy who's building the roster, who's, you know, kind of setting the tone for this team and all mm-hmm. the, you know, how they want to play and all this stuff. But, and Doug Marrone kind of has to be the bad guy here in the middle of it. But at the same point, like, what, you know, from the top down, why can't you make this work? I mean, you drafted this guy. You know, this is one of Dave Caldwell's kind of crowning yes. achievements here as a draft pick that's actually worked out.
It's his best
guys drafted this guy. Make it work.
Yeah, I mean, it's his best first-round pick, I should say. Probably Yannick Ngakoue might be his best pick, but certainly his best first-round pick is Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey is you know, a legitimately great football player. And unless you're getting an absolute premium to trade him, you would figure that he, you know, you should do whatever it takes to get him back in the fold. It's not like this is an Antonio Brown situation where he's being disruptive in practice or he's doing, you know, obviously worse things off the field, being accused of sexual assault off the field. Like, this is just a guy saying, hey, I want to win, and I think I can help us. I think I can help us win better by using me in this role that I think I'm best fit for, and I'm frustrated that I'm not being used in that role. So, yeah, I think absolutely this is the Jaguars should resolve the situation internally. But let's say the Jaguars do not resolve the situation internally. Where could you see Jalen Ramsey heading? What are some of the destinations that you think make sense for Jalen Ramsey as far as, without getting to the compensation, just in terms of, you know, a team that might be looking to add help at cornerback?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I think the first thing is you have to look and say, okay, one, who's kind of in a win now mode yep. and really needs a cornerback? And I think the most obvious answers right there are the Chiefs, yep. the Eagles, and the Saints. Mm-hmm. Although the Drew Brees injury kind of throws the Saints into question a little yeah. bit there, because how much do you think you can win right now, and an elite cornerback, can he kind of make you a Super Bowl contender there? So, mm-hmm. You know, I think the Chiefs are the team that's so intriguing. I yeah. just am a little unsure if they would actually, if they could actually pull it off given the investments that they've made elsewhere in their roster and what they would have to give up to get him. But just in terms of like scheme and fit and a team that is, you know, has legit Super Bowl aspirations, I would love to see him there. I'd love to see him in the same secondary as Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah.
You know, I think they need him really bad. But, you know, all the guys who are really plugged into the Chiefs right now, you know, our beat writer Nate Taylor, you know, the guys who are on the ground in Kansas City, they are kind of pumping the brakes on those connections right now, just because I think of all these things that I just kind of mentioned. They, you know, they're very heavily invested in Frank Clark. They've already paid Tyreek Hill, and they're going to have to very, in the not too distant future, give a insanely large record-breaking contract to Patrick Mahomes. So, you know, you can only pay top of the market deals for so many guys, and they're already there with several other guys. So, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think the Eagles then are also really intriguing. You know, it's kind of one of their glaring weaknesses on their roster right now, where they don't have a lot of weaknesses on the roster, at least before injuries mm-hmm. became a factor last week. So, you know, I'd love to see Jalen Ramsey in that secondary there. I think they really could really use him, and I think that would make them the NFC favorite if they were to figure out a way to get him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, the two teams you brought up make total sense. The Chiefs, there is that concern. I think, you know, maybe fans sometimes think about the cap situation. There's also the reality of just some owners just don't have, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to commit to
cash.
Right,
yeah, straight up cash.
Yeah, and there's, you know, every team has a budget for not just, you know, filling out your roster and filling out the cap, but also just how much money you can spend on your roster in a given year. So the Chiefs are obviously budgeting for a Patrick Mahomes extension. They know it's coming. It's going to come this offseason. It's going to be a extremely large number. They're not going to let Patrick Mahomes get away, obviously, but it is another, you know, Jalen Ramsey's extension is going to be probably $40 million in guarantees, you would figure, at the very least. And that's a lot of money for a Chiefs team that obviously, you know, the franchise is worth it. But just actually having that cash on hand, you know, it's something that teams have to think about, put it that way. So maybe $40
million. What do you think about the Ravens as a potential landing spot Ramsey?
I was going to bring up the Ravens. Let me just get to the Eagles.
Sorry, I'm just taking over hosting your show.
No. See, you're thinking in the same wavelength. So the Eagles quickly, the one thing I would say about the Eagles is it makes total sense for them to make, they're the most active trade team in the league. They need help at cornerback. Jalen Ramsey is a franchise player. They love getting young talent. The one thing I would say is they have not been an organization historically under Howie Roseman that spent a lot of money at cornerback. They you know, 1 year deals, typically draft picks. They really don't invest in that position. They spent a lot at safety, but not at cornerback. So I wonder, you know, would they be willing to trade for Jalen Ramsey? Number one, you'd figure they're going to have to give him an extension. They're not going to trade for him and then let him leave. But do you trade for him and then change the way that you construct your roster? It's a question. I'm not saying that's a bad idea. I just think it'd be different for the Eagles. In terms of the Ravens, though, I like the idea. The Ravens, we'll talk about them a little bit after the break here. The Ravens have issues at cornerback. They've already lost Jimmy Smith for a while. Tavon Young, their slot corner, is out for the year. There are certainly questions there, and they're a team that has, you know, focused heavily on adding talent at cornerback. They're a team that historically, you know, whether it's first-round picks, whether it's free agency, whether it's retaining their guys, they do love having valuable cornerbacks. Marlon Humphrey, I think, is already almost, you know, a star in this league, not on Jalen Ramsey's level, but maybe in that second tier, a very underrated guy. And I wonder if, you know, this is the sort of trade, the sort of guy they want to go in for, where they say, okay, we have the possibility to get a Hall of Fame caliber cornerback for a decade. They love their draft capital under Eric DaCosta. We still haven't really seen a ton of how he's going to operate. You'd figure he's going to be similar to Ozzie Newsome, but, you know, this could be a trade where they say, okay, you know, we have a young quarterback in Lamar Jackson. We have a cheaper roster in some ways. We lost talent during this offseason. We brought in Earl Thomas, but we lost a lot of players who are making good money. So maybe getting Jalen Ramsey is a guy we want to build around, as sort of, you know, the next guy in that sort of Hall of Fame tier of your Ray Lewis's and your Ed Reed's. Maybe Jalen Ramsey could be the next guy sort of in that, you know, procession for the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, I just, like, I love the fit and the potential and just kind of imagining this, like, new Legion of Boom.
Yep.
You know, you pair Earl Thomas with a really, really good corner, and it's so fun to think about. And I wish, honestly, I wish it could happen this week and happen before that game in Arrowhead when the Ravens are playing the Chiefs this weekend. So I think they're where I would, like, I would, it's a place where I'd, like, most like to see him. I'd love to see him in Baltimore or Kansas City. Those are my two, like, ideal destinations. But my hesitation with the Ravens is exactly what you said, is that is how much they value their draft capital. And it's not a move that they would typically make, giving up a future first-round pick. But, I mean, the model that we're seeing working in the NFL right now is when you've got a cheap quarterback, especially who you think is good enough to get you to the playoffs, you do everything you can to build the rest of the roster around him, and you make aggressive trades, you sign big free agents. So I would love to see Eric DaCosta do it. I'm just not sure if he's quite aggressive enough to make it happen.
Can I give you a team that has not been talked about a lot that I think makes some sense, at least to me?
Yes.
What about the Dallas Cowboys?
This
is a team that passed on Jalen Ramsey to take Ezekiel Elliott several years ago. They are very good to start the year. They're 2-0. Their offense looks great. They are a team that is, you know, certainly you would figure in Super Bowl contention, a team that expects to win and win a bunch this year. They have a decent secondary. You know, Anthony Brown is playing well. Byron Jones is obviously their top corner, but a guy who's coming up for a contract this offseason and a guy who they have not signed to an extension yet, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'd rather have Jalen Ramsey than Byron Jones long-term, right?
That's my point. So now, not only do they have Byron Jones, who they might not want to sign, they might want to be the guy who they, you know, who they move on from if they make other deals. You obviously have a lot of contracts to hand out. I'm less concerned about Jerry Jones paying out big money than just about any other owner in the league. But if you're the Jaguars and you're trading Jalen Ramsey, well, here's your chance to get Byron Jones, who has the size to play in your scheme. They do prefer bigger, stronger cornerbacks. Byron Jones is 6'1 and 199. You know, a guy who can play on the outside in your scheme, who can take over for Jalen Ramsey, where you're not telling your team, hey, we're selling out and we're, you know, going to trade our best player and get a couple draft picks on the line. We have a guy who can make a difference for us now, and maybe we get a pick. I wonder if that could be a trade that might make sense for both sides.
Gosh, it does. The way you lay it out right there. I do remember Mina Kimes, friend of your pod, said the other day, though, like in that story that she wrote with Jalen Ramsey last summer, that he like is still holding like a pretty serious grudge against the Joneses for them not taking him in the draft when they took Ezekiel Elliott instead. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like a contract with $50 million of guarantees in it would probably make that grudge go away. Yep. But Yeah, that'd be my one concern there, is that he would not want to play for them, but that he would probably be the first player in the history of the NFL who didn't want to go play for the Cowboys.
Yes. Money, at least for me. I'm pretty petty. I feel like $30 or $40 million in guaranteed money is something that makes me less petty. One team, the last team we'll get to here, at least from my side, the 49ers could make some sense to me as well. They're 2-0, off to a great start. Richard Sherman's playing great on one side of the field. He looks good this year as well. Their corners elsewhere, not necessarily all that great. And Kelly Witherspoon, Kwan Williams has struggled a bit. Jason Verrett, obviously we're all hoping he plays well, but injuries are already giving him some trouble this year. I wonder if they would sit there and say, hey, we have a shot at making the playoffs here in the NFC West. And we've gone through the draft picks in the years past. We've amassed the draft capital. We have gone for guys, what if we can get a franchise difference maker at cornerback? What will that do to transform our defense?
Yeah, no, that's a really intriguing spot too. And we know John Lynch is aggressive.
Yes,
and
for
I don't
sure.
think he would be scared to make that sort of move. And they're also not afraid to spend money. So I don't think draft capital or cash or cap considerations would be a huge, huge concern there. And as good as Richard Sherman has been playing so far this year, he's nearing the end. And
yeah, 31.
It would be fantastic to kind of pair those guys together for the short term and then let Jalen Ramsey be your starter long term there with a long term contract after Richard Sherman is done. So sure, I like all of these options. And I think what's so intriguing about this Jalen Ramsey speculation is that, one, if I had to bet right now, I bet they don't trade him. That would be, I guess, where my money would be if I were to gamble in that sort of way. But we have so many options. That's what happens when there's a player of his caliber who is all of a sudden available. You see how he could fit in so many different places, which is why it's so maddening that the Jags can't seem to make him fit in their own scheme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And we brought up Richard Sherman, and Richard Sherman is someone who's given a quote about this in recent weeks or recent days, and talking about the leverage players are exploiting in the NFL, and certainly, there's you would compare it to the NBA, you would compare it to sort of the leverage top tier players have had in moving around and sort of creating opportunities for themselves. And Richard Sherman is someone who, has publicly spoken out many times about, players having that ability to, sort of create their own situations and create their own opportunities. And it seems like it's becoming more of a conversation in the NFL now, especially over the last, couple months, where you had Melvin Gordon holding out, you had Ezekiel Elliott holding out. Obviously that got resolved. The Antonio Brown situation where he forced his way out of Oakland, the Minkah Fitzpatrick situation where he was frustrated and wanted the trade and then ended up getting traded to Pittsburgh. Do you think this is a more pressing issue now than it was in years past? What do you think the cause is? And do you think it's going to continue to keep happening?
Yes. I mean, I think it is a real issue. I don't think it's just kind of a media created issue. I mean, I think the fact that all of the situations that you just rattled off, it used to be that you'd see just one of those type of situations where really the only time you would ever see a player trying to exert any leverage was when they were franchise tagged. It was kind of, that was their holdout time. I think owners are concerned about it because it's happening a lot. But I think this is also kind of a problem of their own creation. Mm-hmm. And, I did a lot of reporting this summer about kind of some player issues and CBA issues and for a story that should be running soon at The Athletic. And the rookie salary structure and the franchise tag, the way that's used with multiple chances to use the franchise tag and the fifth year option as part of that rookie salary structure. I mean, it greatly reduces players' freedom of movement, and especially for first round picks. And just about all these guys that we're talking about that are unhappy are first round picks. And one, they're really good players, but two, they're guys that they know that their ability to maximize their earning potential is severely limited by the NFL rules and stuff that's ingrained in the CBA, and that teams can use the franchise tag on them, not just once, but they can use it twice in addition to that fifth year option. So they're greatly restricted from actually hitting free agency. And the only kind of recourse that they have at this point is you know, holding out, demanding trades. And I know fans don't love it. You know, fans always, it seems, almost always seem to side with ownership in these type of situations, which always confuses me a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I understand why they want to take some of this power back and to have a little bit more control over their prime years of their career and be able to capitalize. And, you know, they look at the NBA and they see how guys are able to kind of dictate where they go. They're able to, you know, have more freedom of movement. Obviously, they have guaranteed contracts, which the NFL doesn't have. I don't think that's super realistic that that's going to become the norm at any point soon. It's not part of the CBA. It's just teams aren't giving guaranteed contracts. It's not something that the players are collectively bargaining there. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really what the problem is. So when owners now are starting, and we see these stories coming out there, I think Dan Graziano wrote one this week about, you know, how owners are going to consider some sort of penalties, you know, additional penalties for players that are holding out. Mm-hmm. You know, I think what they've got to do is in these next CBA negotiations, eliminate some of these things, whether it's the fifth year option for these first round picks or the franchise tag. I can't see them actually getting rid of the franchise tag, but it's all of these factors together that they've created this system where, you know, players are pushing back and wanting to take a little bit more control of their careers now.
Yeah, I think absolutely the franchise tag, it would be incredibly difficult to, you know, get rid of that. I don't think that's about to happen anytime soon. But, you know, that reduces so much of the leverage players have at the top level. And I think that's going to be what we see happening in the future. I think we may see more, you know, sort of Julio Jones-style contracts from some teams where he got $66 million in his extension and $64 million is guaranteed. You know, I think you'll see more deals like that when you have permissive owners. The Falcons are one of the more generous ownership groups in the league, and top tier players where there's just really no alternative, where you just say, we have to have this guy on our roster. And I think you'll see players at that tier continue to sort of exploit their leverage, whether it be a Jalen Ramsey requesting a trade, whether it be a Julio Jones threatening to hold out unless he gets a new deal 2 years away from free agency. You know, I think you'll see players at the top level retire quicker because they make more money. But I think it's going to influence at this point, if the CBA stays relatively similar, just those top tier guys. I think something's going to have to change in the CBA for that to trickle down to sort of the more rank and file in the players union.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it would be interesting, and I haven't seen this reporting done yet, how these sort of holdouts are received kind of by the NFL membership at large, the guys that are on minimum contracts and, you know, kind of the guys that are bouncing from team to team and, you know, the 50 through 53rd man on the roster. Yeah. A lot of those guys, I think, would probably be afraid to speak out about it. But, you know, but I think it is one of those things that it kind of affects the entire membership, the entire league. But really it's that these top tier guys in the first round picks who are most affected and also have the most leverage to actually affect any change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Let's hit a break here. Let's talk about two of the week 3 games in a moment here on the Bill Barnwell Show. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN, joined again by The Athletic's Lindsay Jones. Let's preview two of the more interesting games, at least to me, in week 3 of the NFL season. And I think the big one, obviously the one people are most excited about, is Chiefs-Ravens, 2-2-0 teams. We have the Chiefs offense, which continues to look like a juggernaut, going up against the Ravens, who historically, great defense, looked impressive the first 2 weeks of the year, and have Lamar Jackson playing like an MVP candidate through 2 weeks. So the most complete Ravens team maybe we've seen in a while. I have to admit, though, and I've been wrong before, I will be wrong again, I could be wrong here, I have kind of a hot take about this game before it starts.
Do you have a hot take drop? We need some flames coming out. I'm ready. Bring on this hot take.
I don't have enough of them typically, I think, to justify any drops in the hot take business. But the thing I would say is this. We're assuming the Ravens defense is the Ravens defense we know from years past. And at the very least, I'm skeptical that is the case. The Ravens lost a ton of talent during the offseason. C.J. Mosley, Terrell Suggs, Darius Smith, Eric Weddle. And granted, they brought in Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas is a fantastic player. I love Earl Thomas. But they've already lost Tavon Young and Brandon Carr. Or not Brandon Carr, Jimmy Smith at cornerback. Young's out for the year. Jimmy Smith is out I believe, for this Chiefs game as well. And you look at how they've played this year. Week one, they played the Dolphins. I'm not sure the Dolphins are a legitimate NFL team, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So I am very skeptical that that means very much to me in terms of evaluating the Ravens defense. And then last week, Kyler Murray was 25 of 40 for 349. They moved the ball consistently up and down the field in the Ravens. They just really struggled in the red zone. And I don't think the Chiefs are going to have the same struggles in the red zone that Arizona did. So to me, I could see a situation where I think we're heading into this game thinking it's going to be great offense versus great defense on the Baltimore side. I don't know if that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are legitimate concerns. I don't think that's a super hot take. I mean, I think you got to work on your hot take delivery, Bill, before you're going to kind of be a hot take master there. But I think those are legitimate concerns. And I think the one thing that we can expect out of this game and expect out of the Ravens defense is at least stylistically what they're going to do. I think they can take a lot from the success that they had against Patrick Mahomes last year when those two teams played in December, went to overtime. And, you know, I think we know what Wink Martindale, their defensive coordinator, what he wants to do. And that's going to bring a lot of pressure, try to hit Patrick Mahomes as much as possible. Just the question is how effective then can they be at doing that? And do they have the personnel that here in week three is able to do what they were able to do last year when they had, Za'Darius Smith and Terrell Suggs on the edges instead of some new guys. So, mm-hmm. I think stylistically we know what they're going to do. I know they know how to get after the Chiefs and how to attack Patrick Mahomes. I'm just not sure, like you said, if they're going to be able to actually follow through with it. And, you know, I was doing some reading this morning, and Jeff Zrebick, the Ravens beat writer for The Athletic, he went into this a lot, and he made a really good point where he said, if this game was happening in January right now, if mm-hmm. this was a playoff game, like let's say that this is a divisional playoff game, he thinks that in January, the Ravens defense will probably be built and ready to face the Chiefs mm-hmm. and to really kind of give the Chiefs a good game. But here in week three, he's just not sure that they're together enough to do that yet. And given the injury situations that you mentioned. So, you know, I would certainly pick the Chiefs in this game, but I am so excited to watch it. I mean, a lot of times if I'm home on a Sunday, I'll watch a lot on Red Zone and jump mm-hmm. around. But I think for those 1 o'clock games, it's going to be like strictly on that game. And it's going to take a lot to pry me away from Ravens Chiefs in that early window.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think it's a really good point. And last year, they did a decent job against the Chiefs, which it's all relative. It's a sliding scale. They allowed 27 points. That game went to overtime. That was actually the game where Robert Griffin came in for Lamar Jackson in overtime. And then the Baltimore offense kind of stalled out once he got in there. They were effective. The Chiefs had to score with 53 seconds left to kind of tie the game and get the game into overtime to begin with. The Ravens almost won the game without getting to overtime. And, I think it's just tough because I don't know what you do to stop this defense if you don't have a great natural pass rush and you're not able to drop seven into coverage and rush four. The Ravens are one of the most blitz-happy teams in the NFL. They were second in the NFL in blitz percentage last year. They're second in the NFL in blitz percentage this year. And Patrick Mahomes has the best QBR in the NFL since the start of 2018 against the blitz. I mean, it's, you know, you would figure that it's going to be him getting away from the blitz, him finding a one-on-one option, whether it's Mecole Hardman, whether it's DeMarcus Robinson, whether it is Travis Kelce, whether it is Sammy Watkins. And eventually there's going to be enough mismatches that he's going to make big plays. And, can the Ravens third and fourth and fifth cornerbacks hold up in coverage against those guys if they're, you know, matched up 40 yards downfield with their speed? I would be skeptical. So I think it could be a game where it's, you know, a couple more three and outs than you might expect from the Chiefs. But I think you're going to see the big plays that we come to see as a hallmark. The thing I wonder about on the flip side of this, though, and I wonder what you think about this in terms of the Ravens' sort of game plan on offense. You have more confidence, I think, in Lamar Jackson than you had in years past after his start to the season. But do you want to slow this game down and just try and hold the ball on offense for as much as possible and just run? Or do you trust that if the game does turn into a shootout, you have the weapons and you have the quarterback to keep up?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll feel confident they have the quarterback that's going to keep up. I still think that there's elements to the Ravens offense that we haven't seen yet. Mm-hmm. You know, I think last week it was kind of really fun to, you know, week one, it was all about Lamar Jackson as a passer. Week two, we got to kind of see him add back in the running elements. I still think that there's parts of this that we haven't seen yet, parts of their evolution that maybe they've even been saving kind of for this game. So I think that they have to be confident in him to kind of engage in a shootout. I don't know if that's misplaced confidence. I guess we'll find out. But I think it's going to just be a really good benchmark for where actually this Ravens offense is, where Lamar Jackson is in his development. Mm-hmm. But I think they're going to be able to score points. You know, I think they're going to be able to take advantage of some, you know, really big explosive plays. I think Marquise Brown is legit. I don't think this is kind of a flash, you know, a rookie flash. I think that they're mm-hmm. just finding more and more ways to use him. And if there's any team that knows how deadly it is to have a really, really fast wide receiver, it's the Chiefs. So you'd hope that they have been planning for that and have some sort of defensive game plan for that. But I'm so excited. I hope it's a shootout. I hope it goes to overtime, you know, as somebody who just is a fan of football and mm-hmm. wants to see kind of this next generation of really good quarterbacks. I hope it's a shootout, and I hope Lamar Jackson can keep up.
Yeah, for sure. The one thing I would say about the Chiefs offense that I did not get to that I wanted to mention, and I want to know what you think. Given that the Chiefs are now down Eric Fisher, who's out for 4 to 6 weeks, they have Cam Irving, who was a benched at guard last year, playing mm-hmm. left tackle for the time being.
Yeah.
Their running game has been bad this year. Damian Williams, yeah. 22 carries for 34 yards, and he's injured. Shady McCoy, 21 for 104, looks good, but really mostly one or two big plays, and he's been pretty inconsistent. Otherwise, he's also not 100%. At this point, are you concerned about the Chiefs running game? Do you think the Ravens maybe just sort of play with 6-7 defensive backs and just dare the Chiefs to run the ball on them?
I mean, if they play with 6 or 7 defensive backs, isn't Patrick Mahomes still just going to
probably?
I mean, I'm just not sure if he's. I'm just not sure if that would scare him at all. And if they find other ways to just. Whether it's, you know, using the running backs in the passing game a little bit more or find other ways to exploit them. But I'm not overly concerned about the Chiefs running game at this point. I mean, I'd like to see them have the option of having a passing game and having a running game. And, you know, some of the points when they were at their best last year, and even when they were at their best in Alex Smith era, it was when they had a kind of a functional running game and a running back that you could rely on all three downs. And, you know, I think lots of people, including myself, have made the argument that if Kareem Hunt had not got himself into trouble and not the Chiefs hadn't cut him, I think they would have won the Super Bowl last year. I think they were a completely different team with a really good running back than they are right now. So I do want to see them at least be functional there, but I'm not super worried about it right now. I mean, mm-hmm. I think if there's any team in the league that can get by with a below average, mediocre running game, it's the Chiefs.
That's probably fair, yeah. I think that's absolutely a good point. Let's get to or do you want to make a pick in this game? I never ask people to make picks, but I feel like I should. Do you feel like the Chiefs are going to take it?
I do. I think it's going to be high scoring. I'll go like 35-28 Chiefs, and hopefully coming down to the very end there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I hope it works out that way. I think the Chiefs are going to win, but, you know, I mean, Lamar Jackson surprised me this year. I didn't think he was capable of what we saw in week one, and I like Lamar Jackson. So I hope it's the game that you are framing it as. I think that'd be really fun.
And I think the Arrowhead crowd is going to be yes. really jacked up. This is their first home game since that AFC Championship game. You know, good weather, good tailgating. I think the home the Arrowhead crowd is going to give the Chiefs just like a little added extra boost.
Yeah, absolutely. The other game I want to get to this week is a game between two teams seemingly heading in different directions. We have the San Francisco 49ers off to a 2-0 start, finally looking like they're going to be delivering on the potential they've been showing for years, and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I can't imagine there is a Steelers fan who could have expected this. An 0-2 start, Ben Roethlisberger out for the year, Mason Rudolph making his first NFL start against the Niners this weekend. So in watching Mason Rudolph play, and I think it's obviously too early to say anything about Mason Rudolph, but just in that first game, you know, he was fine. It wasn't like he was awful. It wasn't like he was fantastic. It wasn't like, oh, wow, there's Ben Roethlisberger part two. This is great. For the Steelers, but it, you know, the interception was Dante Moncrief's fault, which is certainly not Mason Rudolph's fault. Dante Moncrief is not probably going to play this week. He might be done with the Steelers after 2 weeks. He's been that bad. But I don't, you know, I don't think that the Steelers might drop off all that much. Not that Ben Roethlisberger was not playing better, not that he's not a better quarterback than Mason Rudolph, but I think it seems like he has the infrastructure that a young quarterback would need to succeed for a team that expects to compete now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You would think, though, that the way that's typically, if you looked at the Steelers roster and the way that they're kind of constructed with their really good offensive line, they've got a decent running game, they've got a really good number one wide receiver, you would think that'd be kind of the perfect situation for a backup quarterback to slide into. But they've just been so dysfunctional and looked like they're not super well coached all of a sudden. Their defense has been really bad, surprisingly bad. So, yeah, I've got a lot of questions of how they're going to do. They're especially, you know, having to go to the West Coast and playing a Niners defense that's been really, 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 really good. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, certainly not an ideal situation for Mason Rudolph to be making his first start. So I don't know. They just looked so out of sorts, and it's been really hard to watch. I think to see this kind of decimation of a Steelers team that I think we thought were, I don't know if anybody was saying, oh, they're a Super Bowl contender going into this year, but I think kind of there's expectation that they should at least be in the AFC North race and mm-hmm. potentially be a playoff team.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that was strange about last week's game is that you saw what happened. They were, I think, pretty comfortably ahead of the Seahawks in the first half of the game. I think they had two near defensive touchdowns that nearly came back. I think one was actually called back and then one came up short, but they were outplaying the Seahawks in that game, and then once Rudolph came in, they did struggle more, ended up losing the game. I don't know if that was Mason Rudolph's fault. That was really the defensive side of the ball and the struggles they had.
Yeah, I think so too.
In terms of not being able to stop the Seahawks and you know, in third and long situations, like they had third and 16 and were about to force a punt, they let Russell Wilson scramble for 15 yards. And then the Seahawks convert a fourth and one and lock up the game. I mean, you know, maybe they get a field goal and win the game. Maybe we're sitting here saying Mason Rudolph is, you know, Gardner Minshew 2.0 and he's, you know, we got all these young quarterbacks, but the defense didn't get a stop. I mean, they got an abort. They basically only got a stop when the Seahawks muffed a snap and the Steelers recovered it. So, I can't imagine the defense is going to be this bad all season. And part of it was that they played the Patriots in week one, but they were the fifth worst defense, I believe, by DVOA after 2 weeks. And there's just too much talent here for them to be this bad, no?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And, you know, I think they realized that, and that's why we saw them go out and give up a first-round draft pick to get Minkah Fitzpatrick, who's going to kind of be allowed to just play safety for them. Interested to see how integrated he is into their game plan after having arrived there on Monday. I would expect, though, that he should play a lot. I mean, they need him to play a lot. You gave up a lot for him. But yeah, they know. And I found this stat today from Mark Caboli that they have 8 former first round picks starting on their defense. That's incredible. So you should be a lot better than they are. And they need to start playing like they have 8 first round draft picks on their defense.
Yes. And Megan Fitzpatrick, you'd figure, is going to fill in at free safety because Sean Davis is going to hit. I believe he hit injured reserve already, or if he has not, he's going to, but it would be a straight swap there. You know, Minkah Fitzpatrick played cornerback at times for the Dolphins. Maybe his best role could be like a sort of, you know, Tyrann Mathieu sort of hybrid role, but it seems like the logical thing, especially for a guy who doesn't necessarily know the defense yet, is start him at free safety, sort of play him in that role. And then we'll see what the Niners do in terms of exploiting Fitzpatrick's inexperience, because I mean, watching that game last week against the Bengals, what I saw more than anything is just a team that was so aggressive in terms of taking advantage of the Bengals' over-pursuit, is the word I was thinking of, over-pursuit.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, and we know that with Kyle Shanahan, that's what he wants to do on offense. What intrigues me about the Niners is the thing you brought up, though, which is their defense, which has been very good through 2 weeks. And, you know, I wonder how much of them do you think you have to see before you start believing that they are, you know, sort of the team or sort of the defense that they've been hoping they were going to become for years? Are you good now? Does it have to be more weeks? Like, is it a month? Like, what does it take for the Niners to kind of be real in your eyes?
Yeah, I mean, I I think I already believe it. I mean, I saw them a couple times in the preseason training camp, both in Santa Clara and then when they were in Denver practicing against the Broncos. And I mean, honestly, you just look at them and you're like, well, okay. I mean, this is, I mean, they're so big up front. They're really athletic. My big question about believing in that Niners defense is, I just want to see if they can stay healthy.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dee Ford has barely practiced at all. He's got this knee tendonitis that has kind of carried over from when he was in Kansas City. And, you know, he didn't practice for much of the preseason. He's been kind of out of practice most of this week. And they think he's going to be able to play, but it's just something they're going to constantly have to monitor. And then, you know, Nick Bosa is just, you know, I think we're just always going to be talking about some sort of injury situation with him until he can prove that he can make it through entire games and weeks without coming out with some sort of injury. So I think he made it through the Bengals game okay, his practice this week. But, you know, I just want to see those edge guys healthy and stay healthy for consecutive weeks. And that's really my only concern at this point before I'm kind of like all in, just especially with their front seven and their defensive line especially, you know, and if your defensive line is really good, it can make up for some deficiencies elsewhere. But they're just so deep, especially at tackle now, the way they're able to rotate guys in. And then they're so tall and they're just really fun to watch up front. So I'm there. I just want to see them stay healthy on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I mean, the athletes, especially up front, are certainly there. But to your point, I mean, you look at the snap counts for the Bengals game, and granted, you know, they were blowing out the Bengals, so maybe you sit your guys a little more, but Nick Bosa played 43% of the defensive snaps. Dee Ford played 35% of the defensive snaps. And you wonder if that's going to rise. You know, they are going to want to rotate their linemen. They're very deep up front. And, you know, the Eagles do this as a strength, but they don't play their stars 40% of the time. They play them 60, 65% of the time.
Yeah.
With the idea that when we get to January, Fletcher Cox is going to play every snap. Like, he's not going to play 70% of the snaps. We're waiting for the big moments to get him in there. So I think absolutely Nick Bosa is still playing through the high ankle sprain. Dee Ford, his knee is a problem. His quad is a problem. Even if those guys play, they're one of like the rare teams, it seems like, where, you know, I've done research on this. I haven't found any meaning behind when you have your bye week, whether it's better to have it early or late. It makes no difference based on everything I've done. But this is like a team where getting a bye in week four, which is the bye they're about to get, might be good for them just to get those two guys, you know, sort of a week of rest and get them ready for what's going to be a long, you know, 13-game stretch to end the season.
Yeah, I agree. Although I just a high ankle and then knee tendonitis, I'm just afraid that those are things that they're just not going to ever be better until you take months off.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's my fear for those two guys. But hopefully they're young, they're healthy, or resilient, and they're able to, you know, get back to the point that they can continue playing through it. So that's my concern there. But I think that the week four bye is going to be good offensively as they are trying to adjust to life without Joe Staley, which I think it's been a really underreported or underrated injury this week, just given all the other stuff that's been going on in the league. But, you know, you just don't replace a guy like Joe Staley, and they don't have a great kind of backup plan here, I think.
Yeah,
I'm not super confident in what they're going to do there at left tackle.
It's going to be Justin School. I'm mispronouncing his name. I apologize. But the rookie.
No, it's School. It's pronounced like School. You're right.
Okay, that's a good guess. Very rarely do I get my first guess right with pronouncing players' names. But, yeah, rookie sixth round pick is going to be stepping in. And, I mean, Joe Staley is just an institution there. You don't replace a guy like that with anybody. And, you know, maybe they'll be active in the trade market. I don't think they're going to go out and get Trent Williams from Washington, given that Kyle Shanahan is the head coach of this team. But, you know, certainly a big loss for a team that their offensive line finally looked like it was coming together. Weston Richburg finally looks like the guy he was several years ago with the Giants. So you would hope that they do find a solution there, that either School or wherever they end up playing a tackle ends up holding up. But, yeah, I mean, this is going to be a really interesting game. And I think with the Niners, they get out to a 3-0 start, even given that the NFC West is in good shape. That puts them in really strong, in a really strong spot to end up with a wild card down the line. Obviously, it's only three games. Teams can miss the playoffs after starting 3-0. It happens all the time. But, I mean, just banking those three wins to start the year puts them in such good shape going forward.
Yeah, and I think this is an okay, you know, I mean, I think the, we already talked a lot about the Steelers defense. I think the one thing they do have is the pass rush. And so it is going to be a big challenge for Justin School in his first start. But yeah, you're right. If they can get to 3-0, that's huge. And, you know, before we move on from that, I just one more thing about Joe Staley is, I went to Von Miller's Pass Rush Summit this summer and sat through like a several hours long film session where they were, you know, watching all these pass rushers going against offensive tackles around the league. And I will say that while a lot of the film session there was, you know, kind of some of it was off the record in terms of the stuff that guys were saying about offensive tackles, I can say that the one guy who got the most kind of universal praise and respect from the guys in that room, and these are guys like, you know, Aaron Donald and Frank Clark and Von Miller, was Joe Staley. I mean, he was the guy who most guys talked about how they had so much trouble against him, how much they respected him. So this is a really significant loss here for the Niners. This is not going from kind of just an average average offensive tackle to an undrafted rookie. This is going from an all-pro to a guy who who's even his college position coach didn't have the best things to say about him this week. This isn't a story from The Athletic that I read this morning, that I just thought was really terrifying if you're a Niners fan. And this is from Justin School's position coach from Vanderbilt. And he said that School is, quote, not 100% in his fundamentals, and he's not the greatest athlete in the world, but he's going to give you everything he's got to get the job done. He might get his tail kicked, but he'll get his tail kicked slowly to get the ball out. So that doesn't give me the best confidence that the best thing that your position coach has to say about you is that at least the pain will happen slowly. So, you know, he works hard. He seems to be really interesting. His dad is like, his father is the executive assistant director for intelligence with the FBI.
Really?
So, yeah. So that's super interesting. So, you know, I think he's, you know, works really hard, probably does a lot of research. Has a father in high places who could probably get some really scary stuff done if, you know, if he needed to, but probably not the best athlete to be facing, Watt and Bud Dupree in his first start.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, and we'll finish up here. In terms of this game, is it more intriguing if the Niners win and start 3-0, or is it more intriguing to you if the Steelers win with Rudolph and kind of salvage what's been a horrible start to start the year?
Ooh, you know, I think the Niners winning just because the NFC West is so interesting right now, where you have two other 2-0 teams with the Rams and the Seahawks. So, you know, I think that race, that division would be so interesting if all three of those teams are 3-0 and what that's going to mean for the NFC. But, you know, I want to see a good showing for Mason Rudolph. I don't want this to be a kind of a lopsided another team where a quarterback gets hurt and it tanks their season. But yeah. I think for the Niners, and, you know, and I know you've been kind of on the Niners bandwagon all off season. I think we talked about it back in June that you were really high on their chances to make the playoffs. So, you know, I imagine you want to be proven right here.
Well, Lindsay, some of the other teams I said were going to improve this year include the Giants and the Jets. So I'm going to hope for a small victory where I can. If I can get the Niners locked down and then maybe work on the Giants and Jets in the months to come in terms of teams that we're expecting to improve, that would be nice. I'll just say that.
So are you saying you think the Niners are going to win this game?
Oh, boy.
Flipping the tables on you here.
I think the Steelers are going to win this game.
All right.
I think the Niners are still going to improve. I can see the Steelers pulling an upset. They're 6.5-point underdogs. I don't know. I just think that I think they absolutely need to win this game. I think the Niners, this is sort of like a house money game for them. I think before the year, if you said, hey, you can start 2-1 to start the year before your bye, they would have been all in. They would have been super thrilled. Steelers, it feels like this might be their season if they lose this game. So I think Mike Tomlin's going to have them ready. And I think that they're going to be better, I think especially on the defensive side of the ball, than they've been the first 2 weeks. So I'm going to go Steelers.
I'll take the Steelers to cover, but the Niners to win. How about that?
That's fine. We will not play the hot take drop that we've developed over the course of the show for this. But Lindsay, if people want to check out what you write and also what you do in terms of podcasting, where can they do that?
Yeah, so you can find all of our stuff or all of my stuff at The Athletic. You can find me on Twitter at @ByLindsayHJones. And yeah, we've got a twice weekly podcast on The Athletic where we kind of go through our power rankings and then do some other rankings of fun things around the league. And then I was on our new podcast called The Lead this week, talking all about the Antonio Brown situation and kind of the league's league's history with dealing with players accused of violence against women in the personal conduct policy. So, yeah, go download those, check those out, and, follow me on Twitter, @ByLindsayHJones.
Awesome. Lindsay, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks so much to Lindsay Jones. And, guys, hey, be sure to check out the Adam Schefter podcast this week. He talks with one of my favorite players, former NFL receiver, two-time Super Bowl winner, Torrey Smith, on why deciding to retire now was the right decision. Torrey Smith, one of the more thoughtful players in the NFL. Very smart guy, definitely worth your time there. And remember to subscribe to the Adam Schefter podcast. And if you want slightly less smart conversation, also my show, The Bill Barnwell Show, wherever you get your podcast. But thanks so much for listening. More audio coming from us next week.